You're listening to the Influencer Podcast, episode number 45. Last week, we were graced with Claire Collins of Gleam Futures, a management agency specializing in digital talent and influencers. We chatted about working with brands, what it's like to represent influencers, and how to best grow and monetize a strong community. I had a blast talking all things influencer management with Claire. This week, we're taking things back to my business roots, the publishing industry, as we have my dear friend, the lovely Jennifer Smith, founder of Spin Literary, that's going to teach us a few things about how to turn our influence into a best-selling book. This show is brought to you by our free tip sheet of the month, Attract Your Ideal Audience, a completely free tip sheet that will help you cut through the clutter, get crystal clear on who you're talking to, and help you start attracting and growing your audience today. You can grab your free tip sheet at juliesolomon.net/newsletter. Before we dive in, I want to give my warm appreciation to our reviewer of the week, and that is Eye of the Sheik, and she says, "Ladies and gents, this is the podcast you've been looking for. The epitome of quality content is right here on the Influencer Podcast. I'm so grateful for Julie and all of the free insight and information she hands out to anyone willing to take it. One lifelong listener gained here." Well, thank you so much, Emma J. with Eye of the Sheik. I am so glad that you are loving this podcast and that it is helping you. So, of course, I want to hear from more of you who listen in each week, so make sure to subscribe to the Influencer Podcast on iTunes, give us a review so I can highlight your review in an upcoming episode, and make sure to screenshot this episode on your phone right now and tag me on your Instagram story at Jules Solomon, our guest today at coffee_loves_wine, and hashtag the Influencer Podcast to let me know that you're joining in today, as you know that I love to share those screenshots on my story too.
Welcome to the Influencer Podcast. Each week, Julie Solomon, a marketing strategist and New York Times best-selling publicist, takes you behind the scenes with successful influencers, bloggers, and industry elites in conversation to share how they engage, persuade, and grow their unique influence. Her mission is to share exclusive insider tips, wisdom, and action-based tools to help you strengthen, monetize, and build your own industry-leading influence.
Hi, influencers, and welcome to this week's episode. We are taking things back to my business roots today, which is the publishing world, as we have my dear, dear friend and lovely colleague, Jennifer Smith, the founder of Spin Literary, on the show today. Spin is a global literary firm providing clients with guidance through every phase of the literary process, from handling their presence on social media to finding their voice to marketing. Spin helps with all components that are behind a publishing success. Jennifer has worked on countless best-selling books with the best in the game, like Joan Rivers, Stephen King, Hillary Rodham Clinton, Bethany Frankel, Dr. Oz, and so many more. I had the privilege of meeting Jennifer a few years ago and had the pleasure of working with her when she was Vice President of Marketing and Communications at Howard Books, which is an imprint of one of the top publishing companies in the world, Simon & Schuster. Jennifer packed up her family and moved them across the globe to her husband's home country of Australia just last year, and now with her own company, her own blog, and plenty of time spent with toes in the sand, Jennifer is showcasing how to live the career and life that you want. So let's welcome her into the podcast today. Hi, Miss Jennifer.
Hello, Julie. It's so good to hear your voice.
I know. It's so good to hear yours and to finally be doing this. I know that this conversation has been a long time coming, so I am so glad that we finally are able to make this happen. And I know that you are sitting your lovely self in Australia at this moment. Tell us where you are and what time is it?
It is 7:53 a.m. on, what day is it today? Friday morning. So it's Thursday for you. I'm a day ahead, and I'm telling you the future is bright. So
oh my gosh, there you go.
You have that to look forward to.
That is so fun. I love that we have you on today. And it's winter. No, it's summer for you right now.
It is summer. Yes, we are completely upside down. So I just keep telling everybody back in the States, when you imagine me, just imagine me like on the ceiling, flipped upside down. And that's pretty much my world. You're in winter, I'm in summer, you're in evening, I'm in daytime. It's been an adjustment for sure.
But I'm sure that you handle it with ease like you always do, which has made you the amazing woman and career professional that you are today. So I'm so excited for my audience to not only get to know you better, but to really soak up so many nuggets that I know that you're going to be sharing today, because you are just a force and I'm so excited to have you on. So I would love if you could just share with our audience a little bit about where your background, where you came from, how you got into, you know, working with Simon & Schuster, how all of that evolved, and then how it got you to Australia today.
Yeah, certainly. So when I started out, and my goodness, this is going to age me, but it was, you know, 20 plus years ago, I had this idea, like a lot of us, that I was going to be the next Katie Couric. So I went to college, I got my degree in communications and journalism, and I started out on that path. And, you know, I had some success in that regard, being a producer and a news director. But at some point, I just took a step back and I said, okay, you know what, this doesn't feel right. And I knew that my passion had always been writing. And so I said, how am I going to combine my passion with my career? And so I started taking informational calls with publishers, only because at that point, I was the person that a lot of the marketing and communications and publicity teams internally was pitching. So I had a lot of contacts in that regard, took some meetings, and ended up meeting somebody who said, look, I think what you bring to the table is really interesting because you understand the language in terms of behind the scenes, what's going on, what producers want to see, what they want to hear. I would love to actually bring you on internally. And that is how I ended up getting into publishing. It was probably, I don't want to say luck of the draw, because I did a lot of hustle and taking those meetings to make those connections. But that just so happened to be a distribution client of Simon & Schuster. And that began a 14-year career within that company. And like many of us, I just pounded the pavement. I rolled up my sleeves and I did what I had to do to keep climbing the ladder. And so I moved through within those years at Simon & Schuster, moved through three different divisions, was the associate director of publicity for one of our divisions in New York for many years, and then was presented an opportunity as they had opened a branch in Nashville, and it had been there a few years. They approached me and said, hey, we need somebody with New York chops who know press, who kind of have those relationships to go down there and just get things running the way that they need to run from a publicity standpoint. And so that's what I ended up doing. So I was there for 6 years before deciding to pack it all up. We've got two little ones. And Australia just seemed like a really, really good option. I'd be lying if I said that some of the decisions we made weren't politically driven, but that's a conversation for another day.
And then, so when you kind of found yourself minding and grinding, not only in New York, but in Nashville as well, I know, I mean, you've done a lot. I mean, you've launched more than 60 books to the New York Times bestsellers list. You've, you know, had placements for clients that include Today Show, GMA, CBS This Morning, People, Time, Esquire, Vanity Fair. We could go on and on. How did you see, because your trajectory throughout this whole time that you were in the industry was really unique, because you were there way before social media took off. And then you were, mm-hmm. you were also there and are still there now when social media is the beast that it is today. So how have you seen that shift with the way in which you take a tangible product and position it to the audience?
Yeah. Well, and I think the answer to that is twofold, because one of the things, especially for young people coming into the business, and I used to teach a lot, and when I speak on the topic, I always tell people, we have this idea that you throw it out to the wall and see what sticks. And for me, it's just, that's never the case. I don't think that that's smart. I think that you run the risk of not having credibility in the marketplace if that's what you do. So I think from a traditional media standpoint, one of the things that helped get from point A to point B in the success is knowing what traditional press outlets were looking for, knowing what those hot button topics were, knowing some of those things that they were looking for to craft messages that would be impactful in the marketplace. And how social media has changed that is it's just another avenue and another vehicle to reach your audience, to reach influencers, to reach potential buyers if you have a product that you're selling, but it's a lot faster and there's a lot more engagement. You know, you can go onto a program, you can have a 90-second spot or, you know, a 2-minute segment with somebody, and that's really fleeting. It's great. You get a quick boost of 2 million, 3 million, 4 million viewers. But what's the return on that investment of your time? Where social media has really changed that, because you have an opportunity to constantly be engaging, to constantly be putting meaningful content out to the people who actually want to hear it from your voice.
Mm. My friends, as creators, we work so hard creating our content. So we don't want to leave it up to things like an algorithm to determine how successful our online brands and businesses can be. And that is why I love Kajabi. Kajabi is the ultimate all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs like myself build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. And I know they can help you too. No matter your niche, Kajabi makes it easy to turn your skills, your passions, your experiences into enriching offers like online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, communities, personalized coaching, and so much more. What I love about Kajabi is that not only does it make it super easy to use, but they don't take a cut of your revenue because everything is owned and controlled by you. You don't need a huge audience to make a sustainable income online. I talk about that all the time here on the podcast. There are thousands of creators on Kajabi making 6 and 7 figures without having hundreds of thousands of followers. And you can too. Right now, Kajabi is offering a free 30-day trial to start your business. Go to kajabi.com/influencer. That's kajabi.com/influencer. Go to kajabi.com/influencer and join the creators and entrepreneurs who have made over $7 billion. My friends, have you ever thought that you have done the hard part? You have started your business and you have taken that leap from belief into really stepping out and claiming a vision for yourself. But you know that if you want to make money doing what you love, you need other support. You need to grow, you need to scale, you need a marketing strategy, you need a lot of this stuff. Now, of course, I talk so much about these things, right? Like how to identify your target audience, where to find them, which marketing channels to focus on so you're really making the most out of your budget. And of course, how to use things like data to set goals. But there's another great podcast that I love out there that also talks about this stuff, and it's called This Is Small Business. This Is Small Business, an original podcast from Amazon, answers so many of these kinds of questions. Whether you're dreaming of starting your business or you're looking to take a part-time side hustle full-time, or maybe you're a few years in and you're ready to scale, This Is Small Business is going to give you the practical tips that you can start using today. And I know that if you love these topics on my podcast, you're going to love them on this one too. Make sure to follow This Is Small Business on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you don't miss these fantastic episodes. And a big thanks to This Is Small Business for sponsoring the show. And I think that what I would also love to know from you, with that said, where do you see in today's market? Because I feel like, especially for a lot of millennials and kind of younger millennials who never really, you know, maybe they just went into the influencer space, so to speak, and all they knew was social media. What are ways in which for that idea of traditional media not being in someone's headspace, if you will, what are some ways in which we could still utilize traditional media in 2018 in a way that is beneficial to either conversion or awareness?
Right. Well, I think the thing that I've seen a lot in terms of trends is people taking on, you know, they're putting great content out into the marketplace. And you're seeing a lot of traditional media outlets who've now grown their digital platforms as well. And there's a way to cross-promote. So they're picking up content from some of these influencers, particularly millennials who are in the marketplace who are hitting that demographic. So whether it's a spot, you know, you might not necessarily see that person have a segment on the Today Show on television on the broadcast, but NBC digital platform has just as many viewers, if not more, and they can cross promote some of that content. So I've seen a lot of pieces that are picked up in the digital space, be it either through Instagram, be it through Facebook, and then they're repositioned on one of those media outlets. And you get a lot of viewers that way. We've had a number of books come to us because of content that's been replaced on a traditional media outlet.
And that, I think that that's something that's so important to really say to the audience that listen in today, because a lot of times I get questions like that is, well, how would traditional media serve me? Or, you know, I'm not a celebrity, or, you know, I don't have a million followers. So, you know, how is that going to serve me? How can I do that? So I want to, if we can, walk someone through, let's say, you know, if they are kind of just starting out, they're wanting to grow the platform, right? How can they use, even if it's just on the most localist scale, how could they use some kind of traditional media to try to give their platform a little bit more of credibility in that kind of expert realm?
Yep. I think the biggest thing is knowing who you're trying to reach. So if you know who your audience is, you then dial it back from there and say, you know, again, taking it back to the regional or even local level, you go, okay, if I'm trying to reach, say, women, you know, 25 to 35 years old, what's going to be the best traditional media outlet to do that? And then from there, it's hustle. It's pounding the pavement. It's making those connections. You know, even though in a digital world, we're all connected, I think one of the things when it comes to your relationships, particularly with members of the press, it's taking that time to say, hey, let's go get a cup of coffee, or let's get a glass of wine, let's chat. And that gives them an idea to understand your brand, understand what you're trying to do, and then crafting a message that's going to be relatable for that audience. And then you can use that platform to re-promote your site, grab some of their audience members and direct them towards what you're doing. And that's how you can use traditional media to keep engaging and getting people over onto your network and your platform.
Mm. And so that's going to pose to my next question, which is how important is being resourceful?
I
know you're going to have a lot to say about this, which is why I'm excited. But, you know, for an influencer listening today, or even just someone who's a creative who maybe has it in their, you know, in the back of their brain to one day write a book, like, how important is it for them to start being resourceful now?
I can't even... Oh my, it's so important. My goodness. It is probably the thing that's either going to make or break your success. There are so many people in the marketplace. Everybody has an idea. You know, when it comes to books, I hear so many people, I want to write a book. I want to do this. I want to do that. But there has to be action behind all of those words. And that's where becoming resourceful and being resourceful, again, that's going to make or break the success. You have to be out there. You have to be looking for different avenues, different partnerships, ways to engage your audience. Also, you know, content that you're putting out into the marketplace, it's all about hustle. You know, you can have as many ideas as the next person, but if you're sitting on those ideas and not putting them into practice and in action, nothing's going to happen. They're just going to be ideas. And I say that to people a lot because so many people also think that they can write a book and then do all of the engagement, do all of the platform building after the fact. And that's just... In the world that we live in now, consumers are extremely smart. Technology has made it possible that we are very informed, and we can read through people that are not authentic really, really quickly. And so if somebody is trying to write a book or they're trying to sell a product, you have to have a pre-made engagement, a pre-made audience, people who trust your voice already in place before you can start selling things to them. Or before you can start talking about your book. I just had a client, it was a publisher who was releasing this book out into the market. We ended up getting a network package with NBC for them. We also had a bunch of stuff through Fox and some great print pieces lined up. But the author was young, and it wasn't he's not an influencer. His story is what was really compelling. And the publisher came to me 2 weeks before the book release and said, hey, we want to invest $30,000 to build out his mark or to build out his social platform. And I said, why would you do that? You're going to spend all of this money, create this social network for him, and then all of a sudden say, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. That people aren't going to trust his voice. If they haven't heard your voice for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months prior to, you can't just throw something into the market and then say, I'm going to use this as a sales tool, because that's all it is then. You're not engaging. You're not authentic. It's basically a way to get from point A to point B. And I told them, I said, go invest your money somewhere else where you're actually going to have a sales funnel, because trying to do it on a platform that's about engagement, it's going to fall flat.
And that's such a fantastic takeaway, because I think a lot of times, you know, whether whoever comes to someone and says, you know, I want to write a book, I think that one of my biggest questions back to them is really the why, because if it really is just to become like another sales channel for you, then it's probably not going to be successful unless you are already known in the publishing space as a best-selling author.
Exactly. And that's the other thing too. And it's really twofold. I mean, you can't just, you have to have a genuine reason for wanting to write a book. And again, especially if it's a way to engage with your audience and it's content that they want to hear, you need to have that background in terms of doing it. The other thing I always tell everybody is, writing a book is not going to make you famous. There's this common misconception in the marketplace that, oh, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to make $1 million from it, and then I'm going to be famous. I cannot tell you how incorrect that is. Most people do not make that much, especially from their first book. And so I would say, especially in the changing marketplace, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, before the crash in 2008, things were a little bit different. But since that time and with technology and with influencers being where they are, I would say that a book should be an addition to what you're already doing. It should make sense. If you are, say, a fitness expert, you know, and you have 50,000 to 100,000 fans and you are constantly engaged with them and you have a high engagement rate, then yes, you know what? It might be time to meet with a literary agent or to call somebody to take you through the steps of what that might look like. But again, coming out and trying to do that on the front end, I've seen it fall flat so many times in the last couple of years that I think the market is going in the direction where if you don't already have that platform built in and that engagement built in, a book is not going to serve its purpose.
Mm. And really, you know, you kind of answered the why in that question, that answer too, when, you know, because my next question for you was going to be like, well, then why should someone write a book? And you answered it beautifully with really, it should just kind of supplement or be in support of the platform that you've already created.
And that's just it. It's especially if you're putting out content that is, and one of the things I always talk about is being inspiring, being empowering. You know, there's enough stuff that we can, you know, that can muddle up or muddy up the noise that we have coming from so many things and so many outlets and technology with all of us being connected, that my biggest thing that I tell people is, how are you making an impact with the people that are engaged with you? So is your message impactful? How is it changing their lives? How is it empowering them to do better? You know, and it doesn't have to be this profound aha moment. Again, it can be somebody who's really engaged, say, on the fitness and lifestyle side, who people have really resonated with because of their message, you know, and making sure that you're putting out a book that is in line with that message, you know, or maybe it's somebody who is, you know, well-versed in empowerment and talks about women's issues. There's a lot of different avenues and different genres that you can talk about and messages that you can get out there. But again, it needs to be authentic and it needs to be on point with your brand, because otherwise it's a complete disconnect. Mm.
So now it's time for some loaded questions. So let's say that I am listening right now and I'm thinking to myself, okay, like I'm able to check off the boxes of what she's saying. Like, I have this platform, I have this great community, it's super engaged. You know, I have a good idea for a book, you know, because I know that this is a challenge you had mentioned. When would be the right time to release that book, and how does that process come about?
Right. Well, I think that's the thing where a lot of people get stuck, is because they all of a sudden they go, okay, it feels right. I have this idea. I don't know what the next step is. And if you're really serious about doing a book, I know, again, there's a lot of different channels to do it through. You can self-publish. You're not going to get the sell-through that you would with a traditional publisher. And so if you're looking to actually do it on a platform where you're in all of the retail chains, you've got a team behind you, the traditional publishing route is a good way to go. And the way to do that is to consult with a literary agent. agent or a literary consultant to say, hey, here's where I'm at. I have this idea. I actually have some writing samples as well. What do you think? And at that point, if somebody knows the market really well, what they'll do is they'll sit down with you and they'll say, okay, how long is it going to take to actually get this manuscript completed? And then from that point, what publishers do we think would actually be interested in this type of content? And then you look at what they have going on. Are they speaking to a huge group of people in 18 months from now? Or do they have another opportunity, a natural opportunity that's already been planned on their calendar that you could tie into that delivers that great core audience or a huge platform of people to say, okay, I think we can have really good sell-through if we publish the book at this time. A lot of those conversations will happen once a publisher actually acquires the proposal. And it really depends on what their workload is internally as well. That's where most people get a little confused on the process is they think, okay, I've now gotten my book proposal done. I'm ready to go. And they think that the book's going to be out in the marketplace within 3 to 6 months. And I would say more realistically, it will be 12 to 18, if not 24 months.
Mm. That's a great thing to know because you really have to be, again, thinking ahead of like, well, where am I going to be in 24 months?
Yes.
What's going to be happening that I'm going to be able to leverage to really appropriately market this book? I want to back it up to a little bit because one question that I constantly get, and so I'm sure you get it too, is how does that person even find a lit agent or find someone that can help them through that process? Do they just Google? Do they ask people? Is it all of the above? How does one even get a potential agent even interested in their content?
It goes back to being resourceful. And of course, for anybody listening, I'm happy to take them through that process. But one of the things that you need to do is, again, be out there making those connections. If you are serious about what you're doing, you start connecting the dots. Again, we live in this world where we are all connected to one another. So whether we are 2 degrees of separation away from somebody or 6 degrees of separation away from somebody, you start talking to your network. You start saying, hey, guys, I have this idea. Does anybody know anybody in the literary space? So that's one avenue that you can go. You can certainly use Google and you can approach it that way as well. I found that a lot of agents, some of them are not, they just aren't on Google in that sort of way. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for that type of space, a lot of your big agents who are with like CAA or WME, they're not going to be on sites like Google, but you'll find smaller independent literary agents. And that's, if that's what you're looking for, I think that's a really good avenue as well. But again, my biggest thing is again, being resourceful, talking to the people that you know, who knows who, finding out where some of those trails might lead. And doing it that way.
And being resourceful also means listening to this podcast and now knowing who Jennifer is, and then you can reach out to her, which we will talk about in a little bit. One thing that you also mentioned about challenges, which I think was so brilliant, and you've touched on it a little bit, but I want to make sure that we really hit the nail on the head, that you said that in regards to publishing, one of the challenges that you see is people, you know, will their content actually translate into an entire book? And really being honest and asking themselves that question. I may have a great community and platform on Instagram or on a podcast or on my blog, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are book readers. That doesn't necessarily mean that the content's going to translate there. What are some ways that they could potentially try to figure that out? Is it, would you say surveying their audience, or is there some other kind of way in which they can try to navigate that?
Yep. And I think, again, that answer is probably twofold because A, you have to first identify if you as a person wanting to write a book, if it's actually a book or is it a magazine article or is it a 6-piece series that you could do with, say, a news outlet, be it either like a Pop Sugar or a Motto or a She Knows, something along those lines. And so I always challenge people when they come to me to say, I want to write a book, for them to storyboard it out. Because a lot of people have great ideas, but then once they put pen to paper, they go, oh, maybe this is just an article. Maybe I don't have enough to fill up, you know, 15 chapters of a book. And I think that really at that point, they start the framework to go, oh, okay, I could do this in chapter one, or this is going to be a two-piece book and we can do it this way. So the first thing is to dial it down and see what content it actually is that you think can fit into a book. And then once you have that, to start sprinkling some of those ideas into your influencer network, to start saying, hey guys, I'm really interested in writing about this. Would love to hear your thoughts on that. Or, and as you're sprinkling some of that content, to just pose the question to your audience. I mean, if this is how you're going to get into a publishing house and you're going to put your audience on your proposal as the sell-through and the people who are going to be interested in buying your book, you want to know that you can put your money where your mouth is. And so I, again, just have those conversations, pose the question to your audience, and you'll get a pretty good idea whether or not they would be interested in a book from you.
And aside from that too, I want to know from the perspective of acquiring, how important is it is metrics. And I say this because especially when it comes to influencers, you know, the content obviously needs to be there in the platform. But if a potential agent or someone like you who really kind of navigates and consults people through this kind of stuff, they're going to need to come to the table with stuff to really kind of show that the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. So what kind of metrics would they need to pull together to really show a potential publishing house, like, look, this is kind of my community. This is the kind of open rates that I get on my newsletter. And this is the kind of engagement that I have. And this is what I do over on Facebook Live. How does that all kind of fall into place?
It's so important in this day and age and in the marketplace that we find ourselves in now. And that's the thing I try and tell so many people is that you can have amazing content. You can be a great writer, but if you don't have a way to sell it, it's just not going to happen these days. You know, that's publishers do not operate in the same way that they did prior to 2008. And so budgets are a lot tighter, and people are a lot more cautious about moving forward, especially with a new author. So that's most of the proposals that I put together. It is a combination of content and a combination of network, and then also sprinkling in some really substantial and concrete examples of some of that content. And so, and for most of what I do now, I have authors and clients actually lead with those numbers. Because that is when you're looking at the acquisition process, your publisher, your editor, your sales team, they're pulling profit, they're pulling all of their P&L analysis. And again, if you've laid out that you have absolutely no idea who is going to buy the book, or that you have maybe, you know, this small minuscule amount of people from, you know, your mom knows A, B, and C, that's not going to be enough to get you a book deal. And so it is taking a look at your entire network. And some people have a really hard time even doing that because they may have, you know, a great following on, say, Instagram and Facebook, but they don't even realize, oh, hey, that one time I did that interview for some obscure media outlet, say in Boise, Idaho, that got, you know, 12,000 hits. You have to start thinking about every single opportunity that you've had. And so for some people, it's challenging them to go back and to realize some of those nuggets that they've placed in the marketplace are really important, because it just gives, it gives an overall umbrella of what their reach actually is.
And when you are considering kind of taking on someone to navigate this for them, do you look for those types of like diversification through all of those different examples that you just shared?
I do. And the reason why is, and I've been very honest with people who have come to me who have said, I want to write a book. Here's my story. And I say, well, how are you going to sell it? And they have absolutely no idea. Well, what's your network? Who are your readers? And unfortunately, if people can't answer those questions for me, I say, you know what, you're not there yet. You've got probably 2 to 3 years of building that you need to do. So come and see me after you've done the groundwork, because I'm not going to do that for you. And so it's really, again, when somebody comes to me, if they have all of those pieces in place, it's then guiding them through the process. And so we look at everything, and it doesn't have to be somebody who has a million fans. It can be somebody who has 20,000 to 50,000 really strong and really engaged fans who are listening, who are talking with them, who are, you know, really, really hungry for the content that they have. So I look at all of the analytics from all of that just to see what I think is going to translate well, and if it will, then translate well into a proposal that you can take to a publisher.
I think that's an excellent kind of reminder for a lot of listeners, because I think that sometimes they just focus on like a number, like a following number, and they don't think about, you know, building their newsletter. I mean, that's the best way to sell somebody, and what those rates are, and, you know, how many direct messages do you get? How many ratings and reviews do you get on, you know, a blog post or comments that you get? I mean, it really is kind of factoring all of those things that I think a lot of people tend to overlook or don't really pay much attention to because they're just focused on a following number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where I think a lot of people just in the landscape that we find ourselves in now are maybe misguided. I know that all of us would love to see our numbers grow. We would love, you know, it's human nature. You go, oh, wow, you feel like this thing that you're putting your heart and your soul and all of this energy and time into, you're seeing that monetize, or not monetize so much, but you're seeing it grow by just that number. But if you're not engaged and that number is just solely a number, it's really an empty audience. And I don't say that to, to be negative, but it's a very pragmatic approach where it's make sure that you're engaging and do it authentically. You know, I think there's a lot of programs and a lot of different things that people can use to grow their platform now. And that's great if you're only looking for numbers. But if you're really looking for engagement and your goal in doing all of this is to be impactful and to put content that's relatable out into the marketplace, that then make sure you're doing it with the right approach. And sometimes ignoring the numbers, even though human nature wants you to look at those and only focus on that, you have to really challenge yourself to go, okay, I'm not going to get stuck on that. I want to make sure that the people that I'm reaching are engaged, they're listening, because that's more important to me than just simply growing a number.
Such a good reminder and a good takeaway. And it kind of goes into that idea of awareness, which I want to talk to you about as well, because I know that there's something that you do in terms of just overall connection and growth and awareness, and that I asked you about off air. And you were talking to me about, you know, you love that connection of the conversations, the face-to-face meetings. And you were saying that, you know, far too often people, when they're trying to build something, they get kind of so comfortable with just being behind the computer screen. We get so comfortable with just texting, and and you've really kind of seen that what can be a really nice tool in the toolbox for really growth and awareness is people to engage with the mindset of really trying to build a relationship. So I would love if you could share some examples of what that looks like from your perspective.
Yeah. And I would say relationship building is probably one of the key components that's helped me be successful in my career. It's, again, I know it's easy to sit behind a computer. It's, you can hammer out 100 emails in an hour and you feel accomplished, where I know taking that same hour and going and sitting, you know, for a coffee or a glass of wine with one person, it's, you kind of do the math and you go, okay, what's going to be the better return of my investment in time? But honestly, I can tell you that face-to-face meetings, or those face-to-face meetings, those will be some of the most fruitful relationships and meetings that you will take, because you are putting a name or a face with your name, and you're giving somebody a sense of who you are. We can all be somebody or create something or spin our stories online, but when you're face to face with somebody, that interaction, seeing their eyes, seeing what lights up in them when you're talking, I mean, that gives you a really good opportunity to know, say, let's just for example's sake, a producer. When you talk with them, you can start asking them about things that they're interested in. And as a human, you can just read the conversation and go, oh, this person really likes A, B, and C. And you know then after that meeting that if you now, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, several months down the road, have content that is in line with, you know, that something that you know that producer's interested in, that conversation is going to be the thing that leads you to getting a yes instead of a no. Mm.
That's such a great takeaway. I love all the nuggets that you're sharing today. So I want to ask you a super loaded question too, because it's one that before we got onto this conversation, I had asked my audience questions that they would want answered from you. And so one that came up, and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, how much time do we have? But in a just an overview sense, what makes a book a bestseller?
Oh boy. Yeah, exactly. How much time do we have? And this is kind of one of those golden nugget questions, because sometimes, and this is just the nature of the business, and it's the same can be said with anything in the entertainment industry, movies, television shows. Sometimes you can have all of the pieces of the puzzle lined up, and it just doesn't translate into the marketplace. And I think we've all been there. And it's disappointing, because you can say, oh my goodness, we had all this press lined up. We had all of these things. And then you have to go back to the table and wonder where it fell short. And sometimes it's just the changing landscape of the marketplace. We had a book that we just did last year that, again, had all of the components in place, and it fell short on the sales. And really what it boiled down to was, A, what else was in the marketplace competing, and B, what was selling at this point. And a lot of things since the election last year, a lot of books that are selling in the market are all politically based. Mm. And so that's been one of those tough hills to climb over, and we're not there yet. And so it's a very, I don't want to say volatile, but it's a very uncertain market right now to release a book into, because it seems the trend in terms of what's selling is all really politically based content. And so if you want to do a bestseller in this particular framework, I can't really answer that question for you, because, again, unless you are a journalist or you have run for office or you have something really profound to say in a political sense, I think figuring out the components of a bestseller is really difficult. But to back it up, I think it goes back to, again, making sure that you have great content, making sure that you have the sell-through in terms of an engaged audience, and then making sure that you're putting it out into the marketplace at the right time. And that's something I talk to publishers and authors about a lot as well. It is that a lot of people get stuck in this mindset, particularly in-house and on the publishing side, that, oh, well, if this is going to be a big book, we need to release it within this time frame. A lot of publishers are putting their biggest and best books out in September and October. And so I've had to go in and consult with publishers and challenge them that if they have a book from an influencer who we think has the potential to be a bestseller, why would you put them against all of those giants and really crush their chance in the marketplace to be a bestseller? So I've had to say, guys, what about in November? Or what about putting it in March or April, or even a June or July, where we're not as saturated in the marketplace? And so there's it comes down to a lot of different things. How engaged is your audience? How much engagement have you done on the front end to let them know this book is coming out? Is the content there where we know it's a good book? And then what time frame are you actually releasing it into the marketplace? And I think the other thing that a lot of people overlook is their opportunity to get in front of their audience. So, you know, you need to make sure that you're lining up traditional media, that you've got yourself a good marketing plan as well, that you're engaged with your audience. But what else do you have, which is where speaking comes in to play in terms of having an audience of 2,000 to 10,000 people right there at your fingertips to say, hey guys, here, I've got this book. And then putting sales strategies in place to actually get from point A to point B and move the books off the shelf.
And I know that you do so much amazing work through Spin Literary. And a lot of these kinds of questions that I'm asking you, I know that you go in major deep dives when you take on clients. I know that you're launching a masterclass in the coming months on the literary process and kind of what makes, you know, the components that someone needs to really, you know, get a book acquired. And then, you know, as much as we can control it, turn that book into a bestseller. So that's coming up, which I would love for you to speak on. And then also, I know that you do offer influencers one-on-one sessions to kind of see if the work and really where they are in their brand and in their platform in this moment could potentially translate to a book. So I'd love if you could kind of share with us a little bit of those services and what you offer within Spin.
Yep, absolutely. And that's the biggest thing with the masterclass. I always get two questions. I always get, should I write a book and what's the process? So really the first road that I go down with people is to see how much they know about the process. And so, and I felt like that was one of the greater needs in the marketplace, because so many people, again, have an idea, but they have no idea just the process and what it takes to actually get from an idea to an actual product. So that was one avenue. And then again, the other is becoming a best-selling author. And again, that's sort of, you know, back in the day, most people, we would ask them what their goal is. And it was always being a bestseller. But then at that time, it was, I want to be on Oprah as well. Mm-hmm. And those are great goals to have. But a lot of times what you have to dial it back to is to get really, really real and to start at point A, you know, and let's see what we can do, what benchmarks we can put in place to get you to that end goal. And if we land somewhere in the middle, are you going to be okay with that and managing that expectation? And so that's really what the masterclass on how to make a bestseller would be. And again, it's taking people through what it actually takes to make a bestseller. So many people think, okay, I've got a network of 100,000 people. They seem pretty engaged. I've got this book. But again, you have to be engaging with people 6 to 12 to 18 months beforehand. You have to have them interested. You have to have them really hungry for the content that you're putting out there. And then again, being really creative and making sure that you that you're channeling all of that into sales when the time is right. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, is that they get really scared about asking their network to actually buy anything or to support them in that sort of capacity. And so it's really taking people through just some of the strategies we can put in place. Again, I can never guarantee if it's going to be a bestseller. I sort of have, just because I've been in the business a long time, I can usually tell when I've got the content and the network in place to go, okay, yep, this one is it. But this will help people to sort of frame the conversation and really challenge themselves to go, could I potentially be a best-selling author? Or would I be okay if I sold, you know, this amount of books and it was really influential to my network, but maybe didn't get to be a bestseller? So that's really what that second masterclass is about.
Well, and you've launched over 60 bestsellers, so you definitely know a thing or two about making it happen. And if someone wants to dive deeper into chatting with you about this, where can they find some information to contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, it's funny, when we made the move from Australia, or from America to Australia, one of my things was, because I've been in the literary field for so long and I see the impact that stories have, that's sort of where my heart is in all of this, is that I love a good story. And so we also launched a site called Coffee Loves Wine. And again, it's all just, it's stories. It's meant to inspire, empower, sometimes make us laugh, sometimes make us cry, just challenge us all to make sure that we are being our most authentic selves. And with that, there's a contact button on there where you can reach out to me there. So that's usually where I'm directing people right now. And then obviously, Julie, you've got my contact information as well. So if anybody in your network is interested, you know, I'm happy to talk to people. Reach out to me there. Otherwise, you can reach out to me at Spin Literary as well.
And that was my next question, because I love Coffee Loves Wine. And so I wanted you to tell people about your amazing website. And that's really also too what I think makes you so unique, is because you know what it's like to be a quote unquote blogger. You know, you've been blogging now with Coffee Loves Wine for over a year now, maybe even longer at this point. And and you know what it's like to craft a story and to really be a storyteller at the end of the day, which I think, you know, you kind of understanding both sides of that is going to help immensely when you're working with influencers and bloggers and understanding them, which I think makes you so unique as compared to maybe, you know, somebody else out there in the publishing world that has maybe never actually dived in and been a blogger or been a storyteller and had a website themselves.
Yeah. And that was really one of the things I wanted to do, is, you know, you can have all the corporate experience in the world. But again, years ago when I got into publishing, it was because of a passion that I had for writing and for storytelling. And so to break out of that a little bit, I mean, that was a huge challenge personally. And you do, you start to put yourself out there in ways that on the front end can be scary, but you know that to get from point A to point B, you need to do that. Because again, it's all about being authentic and really connections and not so much connecting just, wow, because we're all on technology, but really connecting and having profound messages that are going to help people in their lives. And so for me, it was being able to put my money where my mouth is and to say to clients, hey, look, I know what you're going through. Here are some of the challenges that I've faced in doing it on my own. So how can we move you over that hump? How can we get you from point A to point B? And again, it's just being able, it's one of those things, again, where you can just say, you know, you're relatable and you understand. And so when it comes to growth, when it comes to interacting, when it comes to engaging, I get those things because I'm in the middle of doing it myself. And so for lack of a better word, you can empathize with your clients and you can really sit with them and brainstorm out substantial and really concrete solutions to get them over some of the challenges that they may be facing.
That's awesome. And it's such a great reminder to us to know that we're not alone in that strategy, in that deep dive, that, you know, you do empathize and you do kind of understand where that potential client is coming from, which is so great. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you really quick, a couple of questions. What is the book that has had the most impact on you in your life?
Oh my goodness, the most impact. Are you talking professionally or personally?
either or both.
Okay. I think when I had first graduated from college, I made my way out to the West Coast, and Catcher in the Rye was just that book that I really loved, that I really resonated with at that point. And I used to sit on the beach in Santa Monica and just read it over and over. And so that at that point in my life had a really, really big impact. I think one of the other books as I've gone through, and it's one of my go-tos again, there's a book called The Tao of Pooh. And I know it sounds funny, but it is a book all about mindfulness, but breaking it down to a really, really simple level and using the backdrop of Winnie the Pooh to do it. And so it talks about, it uses the characters from Winnie the Pooh to just say, okay, you know, here's kind of the mindset that you should have in life. And it kind of gives you that perspective to just, you know, there are certain things you can do in life, but some of the garbage that we all get faced with and inundated with, you just have to let it go. And so that's one of my favorites as well. Yep, go ahead.
And I know that you have worked, I mean, over 60 bestsellers. Do you have a favorite book that you have ever had the privilege of being a part of, or an author that has just made such a global impact that you got to work on their book release with?
Yeah. And it's funny. I can't pinpoint it down to one, but I can pinpoint it down to three. And so Joan Rivers was absolutely amazing. The first time I met her, she was just a ball of fire and energy wrapped up into this tiny little frame. And she had me in stitches laughing. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is a woman, like, I want to live my life the way that she does, where she doesn't take herself so seriously. She knows how to laugh about things, but she knows how to live as well. Mm. And so I just, working with her, my stomach hurt constantly because I was laughing. And she was fantastic to be around. So I loved her. We also had a chance to work with Al Gore on the book Our Choice and An Inconvenient Truth. And Inconvenient Truth actually ended up winning a Grammy for Best Audiobook at the time. And that he also went on to win a Nobel Peace Prize. And so it was that was one of those really, really amazing projects because I think it started a really global conversation about climate change. Mm-hmm. So from a humanitarian and from a, you know, a perspective of leaving a mark on the world, that was one that I really, really enjoyed. But on a personal level, I think one of the projects that probably had the most profound effects on me and impacts on me was working with Patrick Swayze. Mm-hmm. And that project happened to be in his, he was very sick at the time, and it happened to be in some of his final days. And just seeing his, the work ethic that he put in, he was going through some treatments at the same time that he was recording the audiobook for it. And his wife was very involved in that as well. And about 2 weeks after our producers had been out there in his home studio, working with him, through his illness, trying to get the audiobook, ready to go, he passed away. And I still remember just feeling this sadness. And of course, when it happened, everybody knew that we were working on the project. So, you know, we had Barbara Walters and Oprah calling, asking, you know, hey, can we get some of that content, the audio content that you guys have available? We're doing these specials on his life. And that was all wonderful. And obviously, those are huge accolades that in your career, you go, oh, wow, I remember that time. But I think the reason that project was so profound to me is I remember when it was all said and done and we had finally delivered it to his wife. And his wife got choked up in saying, you know, this is a beautiful gift because it was the last project that her husband did. It was the last words. It was the last thing that he did before he passed on. And so much of what that was about their relationship and their love for each other. And I think for the first time in my career, I saw firsthand how stories have the possibility to impact a life so profoundly. And it was one person, it was his wife, but it was so beautiful to see in that moment.
God, those are, I mean, and just to think about the stories that you've been a part of and the journey that you've been on throughout your career is just so amazing. So thank you so much for taking us along on that ride today and sharing those with us, those beautiful book answers. I have to ask you one question that I ask everyone that comes onto the show. And that is, what does influence mean to you?
For me, it is being able to have an impact on another person's life, whether it's one person, whether it's 10 people, whether it is 100,000 people. I think influencers have a really unique opportunity to impact the lives of others. And so it's, for me, it's a challenge of going, are you making a positive impact? And that's really what I think influencers are called to do, is to change conversations. And by changing those conversations, you have an opportunity to impact and potentially change the world around you.
Well, Ms. Jen, thank you so much for coming on today. I know that you gave us information on where to find you online at Coffee Loves Wine. But if you could reiterate that as well as your socials and anywhere else that anyone that's listening today that wants to reach out, give you some thank yous, give you some love and, you know, maybe even stalk you down and, you know, beg you to work with them because you are the best of the best, my friend.
Thanks, Julie. Yeah, absolutely. So we are at Coffee Loves Wine. You can find us coffeeloveswine.com. You can email me there, Jennifer@coffeeloveswine.com. Otherwise, we are at Spin Literary. We've tried to channel a lot of our stuff just through Coffee Loves Wine and combine those two things. So that is where you can find us. You can show us some love. I would be happy to answer anything. Emails, calls that people need, questions. I'm always here to do so. And as Julie knows, I'm a straight shooter. So if you're up for an honest conversation, I'm your girl.
Yes, yes. And then Instagram is coffee_loves_wine, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
It is. Yep.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Oh, thank you. I miss you. I am so happy to hear your voice. And of course, you know, much like I always say, I wish I was there having a glass of wine with you.
I know. Coffee and then wine.
Are you ready to create your own industry-leading influence? For show notes, downloads, and action-based tips, head to www.theinfluencerpodcast.com, where you can find out more about this week's episode, guest, and our host, Julie Solomon. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please take a minute to go to iTunes and leave a review so we can help other influencers like yourself build their own successful business.